Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I hope you are experiencing the quickening, just like I am. And I'm calling it the quickening because as it seems, every day goes by with the tyranny at hand that we have more and more to get engaged with. It's kind of like if you don't grab that stick or if you don't grab that thing floating on the stream that goes by you at that point in time, the amount of effort and energy you have to expend to get it because you need it goes up. This is why, you know, we have this quickening, the need to reach out, because we don't have one stream that's going by. We have multiple streams. And if you look at the tyrannical government that we're living under, there are many, 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 many streams that are affected to this. And if you look at your everyday life and things such as your career, things that you have to do at your job and for your career, there's multiple streams to that. And it's not like everything hits you at once, but you have to be poised to be able to grab and capture those things or take care of those things when they go by. Because if you don't, then I don't think anybody out there does not understand the pains of procrastination. Sometimes you have to pay more because you didn't get the payment made on time. Sometimes you have to do something more because it didn't get done or... Because it didn't get done, it has caused all sorts of other problems and created new streams. Therefore, there is a quickening. And if you are not getting caught up in the quickening, which means what that you're adjusting yourself to this new way of life, then you are going to find that there are things that are just going to go away. And I don't want to see that happen to anybody. This is why... At the beginning of every year, I actually go through what does it take to be successful in getting all the things done, to find success in the things that are important in your life so that you can obtain those ultimate goals. So setting and creating effective goals is really important. This is why at the very end of the year, we do this. And as a matter of fact, I'm not necessarily going to go through the format and the content that I go through on an annual basis. It's kind of like a curriculum, I guess. I'm just going to consider it that because I'm hoping that I'm helping. And I know that by going through this at least a couple of times, it helps a person learn what, you know, they need to do. And it kind of helps actually reinforce and support that. And I'll give you a good example. Is that you may hear me say something about the setting goals that may not resonate or what have you, and you'll try to set some goals. And then through the year, as you've set those goals, you'll think back, well, you know what, because I didn't do this, or what was it I was supposed to do, or what was it that GR mentioned? And you'll realize that, you know what, the next time I'm going to pay attention. Actually, you can just go back and listen to the podcast again. And in the beginning of the next year, to actually become more effective in setting effective goals, you can actually start doing that by breaking things down and laying out a battle plan. That's what you really have to consider planning out your life, kind of like the strategies of fighting a war. If you are going to win, you have to have winning strategies. But more importantly, you actually have to lay out those strategies. One, so you know what they are and when you need to execute and all of those types of details. Because without the details, then you will find the devil. Because they say the devil is in the details. If you don't have the details, you'll never find the devil and you're just living with them. Anyway, I hope all this makes sense. And it does. But what we want to do is we want to kind of go through the obligatory. So let me just do that because we do have the resolutions and the Madison's notes on nullification that we're going through right now. And as a matter of fact, I got a lot of feedback this past week on the content that you're getting. And so I do know that and some of it was from the normal listeners, those people I actually interface with, but I actually got a lot of feedback from a lot of people who do not give me feedback on a regular basis. So, wow, that's thank you so much for getting engaged. Now, first and foremost, and the most important thing that you need to know is that we have a comment line, 425-270-5416. If there's something you need to comment or you want to comment on, then by all means, just give me a call. We will play your comment or question, and I will try to answer that. But more importantly, I'd much rather set up a dialogue, especially if it lends to that. If it lends to a dialogue, such as I've been throwing Charles out there to say, you know, I'd like to actually talk to Charles and his view. And so, and Charles, I do get your view. I completely understand it. I may not be articulating like I you would think I do. My position is a little bit different than everybody else's, because what I want is I want things to be followed by the Constitution. And Charles's biggest position is that, you know, there needs to be uniform law, and based on current uniform laws of bankruptcy, the people who have student debt should be able to go bankrupt and be able to disclaim that, and so forth and so on. I get that. We are so far outside the framework of the Constitution. That's just one little facet, just one teeny little facet that, you know, I don't want to say bothers Charles, but I think it's just one of those things just to show you how the general government has put themselves in a position that they can do anything they want to do. There's nothing we can do to force them to abide by that Constitution. At least that's how cocky they are today. They have no idea the power that the parents have. All you need, and it's just, you know, it's like, if you've ever seen kids, little children that have been so enabled because the parents have done nothing, and the kids are just literally running rickshaw over their parents. And I mean, and it's usually in those cases, the parents are scared to death of their kids because they don't know what to do. And it's really sad to see that happen, especially in the, I'll say, those children that were raised by baby boomers. Because baby boomers were not raised that way, at least the majority, a very high percentage of the baby boomers were not raised that way. And so my point is that when you see those children, I mean, they absolutely expect to be able to do everything that they're doing. They have a dependency on being able to do everything that they want to do. And that's how bad it is. That's the level of tyranny that we have. This show is sponsored by RepublicReview.org. You're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and the academic evidence-based solutions. I have told you about myself being public enemy number one. I don't want that title. I don't want that position. I want this movement to be recognized, and everybody that's a part of that in its plurality, in context of the collective movement of reclaiming the republic. We all have to be succinct. We all have to be concise, and we all have to demand one thing: full compliance to the Constitution at every level of government. There you go. Now, in many cases, when you look at yourself and you go, you know, there's some things I don't like about myself and I want to change this. And this goes back to those goals, you know, setting goals at the beginning of the year, quitting smoking, quitting drinking, quitting this behavior that you know is just bad and things you just shouldn't be doing. Okay, so you have these behavioral issues or whatever. The only way you can actually make those changes is you have to be adult enough to resolve to not do those things anymore and actually set effective goals to keeping you from doing those things or helping you not do those things or helping you do the things you need to do. In other words, but the bottom line is that key word is maturity. You have to be the adult. You have to actually take control of your own life and say, I need to do this, or I got to stop doing this. And that, at that point, when you have made that that announcement, you've made that let's say declaration or proclamation, then you have to start planning and executing a plan. Well, so here's the thing. I am not wanting to be the only public enemy, number one. The only reason I'm out here is because I know I can't do this. That's why I keep on saying, we need your help. We need your help. So if you've got that level of maturity, if you've got that level of control in your life to where you can actually become the adult to say, I don't care the consequences, devil be damned, I am moving forward in reclaiming the Republic. I'm moving forward in canonizing the Constitution, in centering our government back into the Constitution and making them comply. We're going to hold them accountable. So the question still lies, who's with me? Who's joining me? Now, let's move forward. At Red Pill Expo, we did something that was really, really interesting. We were able to pull in state legislatures into a side meeting. It wasn't as large as I wanted, but we actually had a few states represented there, a few states. And what we want is we want more. And we were going to grow this. And I just had this conversation with Dan Happel of the Red Pill Expo Planning Committee. And he's the guy that's really making things happen. And I'm going to tell you what that conversation was, or I'm going to kind of give you a highlight to why you want to listen to when we hit the content and marketing, or get into the marketing after content. We'll be right back after these two promos, but I'll give you some tickles on why you want to keep on listening. We'll be right back. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and Republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with Republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as Republic review. Please read my argument for Republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so in talking with Mr. Happel, because we're going to be working together in the next Red Pill Expo, what we're going to do is we're actually going to expand what we did. And so I put it out there right now. Start letting your state legislators know that they do not have to pay the admission fee for the general admission to Red Pill Expo. This coming Red Pill Expo, and hopefully on all future expos. What we want to do is give these folks a forum to come to so that we can put them in a room and actually have an opportunity to talk to them about Republic Review to talk to them about canonizing the Constitution, about the things that they can do to get this nation back on track and move the federal government back into the framework, force the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution. Because I'm telling you, once these legislators start recognizing and hearing and being told, the problem is that illiteracy is killing us. We don't know what we can do until we actually lift our finger and realize the power that we have in our one finger. And that goes the same with one state as well as the collective states. The power that we possess in this republic under that their constitution is awesome. Now, we also had Douglas V. Gibbs, I have a recording, because I was able to connect with him finally, regarding the canonizing of the Constitution and getting his organization, the Constitution Association, on board. Completely agrees, and so I haven't, at this point in time, been able to put everything down, but what we're going to do is we're going to kind of create a template for every organization to say, yes, absolutely, we are behind this. And what we want is people to endorse that very specific thing of canonizing the Constitution. Because as people recognize, as we're going to encapsulate the information in this template, people will start recognizing the importance of understanding exactly what that document is, what it does, and what it doesn't do, and what it hasn't done. It has never given the federal government full reign of anything and everything that they want. That has always been based on the lies and deceits of justices, politicians, lawyers, and nameless sea of pernicious people. There we go. So anyway, we got a good show for you. And what we're going to do is dive into the notes on nullification. Harry, I hope you're listening. I really do. The comment line, I just want to emphasize that one more time. Any questions, anytime you've got a question, 425-270-5416 now. And please tell your friends. Be a part of the solution by helping grow this message. Okay, so last episode, we kind of left off finishing paragraph 30. What we're going to do is we're going to start off with paragraph 26 to kind of lead into 31 and so forth, because I honestly believe that repeating this is very important and powerful, and it's worth repeating. So paragraph 26, this is Madison talking about his resolutions of 1798 and his report on those resolutions of January 1800, and providing clarity and trying to explain why things were done the way they were and how things work. Anyway, paragraph 26. And what is the comment of the report on the particular resolution, namely the third resolution? Paragraph 27. In the first place, it conforms to the resolution in using the term which expresses the interposing authority of the states in the plural number of states, not in the singular number state. It is indeed impossible to perceive that the entire current and complexion of the observations explaining and vindicating the resolutions imply necessarily that by the interposition of the states for arresting the evil of usurpation was meant a concurring authority, not that of a single state, whilst the collective meaning of the term gives consistency and effect to the reasoning and the object. Paragraph 28. But besides this general evidence that the report in the invariable use of the plural term states withheld from a single state, the right expressed in the resolution is still more precise and decisive inference to the same effect as afforded by several passages in the document. Paragraph 29. Thus the report observes, quote, The states then, being the parties to the constitutional compact, and in their highest capacity, it follows of necessity that there can be no tribunal above their authority to decide in the last resort whether the compact made by them be violated, and consequently that the parties to it, they must themselves decide in the last resort such questions as may be of sufficient magnitude to require their interposition. Paragraph 30. Now, apart from the palpable insufficiency of an interposition by a single state, and see, this is, I want to emphasize this now because he's kind of laid this out, and now he's focused on a single state and its interposition and its lack of effectiveness. Now, apart from the palpable insufficiency of an interposition by a single state to affect the declared object of the interposition, namely, to maintain authorities and rights which must be the same in all the states, it is not true that there would be no tribunal above the authority of a state. As a state, as a single party, the aggregate authority of the parties being a tribunal above it to decide in the last resort. So in other words, yeah, state is sovereign, but that state's sovereignty, while it is in this union, is, I will just say, and I don't want to say subjugated, but it is at a lower level of sovereignty than the collective. In other words, when you pull all of the sovereigns together, when you have a majority of the sovereigns all agree that there is a problem, then that they actually can and will be able to overcome, you know, the problem that the one state may be facing with the federal government. Does that make sense? Because clearly, a single state does not possess the gunpowder, even California does not possess the political power or the physical power to actually force the federal government into compliance. But when you have 27 states, now you do. And so this is why I want you to understand something. When I came up with this concept for public review, some of these things I really didn't even resonate in my head. I may have glossed over these things and go, yeah, this really supports the idea, and kind of just, you know, literally did that, glossed over it. It's only after I had gone through the concept that came out in the book, and actually the first three books, because the third book is when I kind of distilled what that process was. It wasn't until I really started examining the details, going through the details, to come to find out it's not a devil there. There's an angel there, because everything that I was referring to that I said, yeah, this is how it has to work. And maybe I was just lucky because I kind of have this understanding of contracts, doing contracts with the government and so forth, that enough experience, not necessarily the detailed experience of contract law, but having a profound enough experience to say, this is how things must be working based on contract law. And as we start looking at how Madison starts peeling the onion, all it has done is it has validated and vindicated everything I've been asserting. And so, to me, and I'm going to say it would be the same for you, if you were going through this, it would be like Madison and Jefferson and all of these framers in the ratification debates and the things that they're saying, they are speaking to us from the dust of what this Constitution really is and what and how we need to be looking at it, how we need to be taking care of it, and what we need to do to get it back as our governing document and sailing into prosperity. I keep on wanting to say posterity instead of prosperity. In other words, being able to find, you know, our financial independence, our self-sufficiency, those types of things that would be available to us if we really started enjoying free markets and the liberty that the Constitution gives us. So with that, let me move into paragraph 31. This is where we haven't read. This is the new land now. Again, the language of the report is, quote, if the deliberate exercise of dangerous powers palpably withheld by the Constitution could not justify the parties to it in interposing even so far as to arrest the progress of evil and thereby preserve the Constitution itself as well as to provide for the safety of the parties to it, there would be an end to all relief from usurped power. And he's absolutely correct. I mean, there would be an end to all complete relief. We would no longer be falling under the heels of the thugs or the booted thugs that have their heels on our necks. Those heels would be removed and we would be able to act and interact freely. And we have the power to do this. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me just reread 31 again, because we just started and we went into break. Again, the language of the report is, quote, because we only got halfway through this. Again, the language of the report is, quote, if the deliberate exercise of dangerous powers palpably withheld by the Constitution, in other words, blatantly constrained, strictly withheld by the Constitution, could not justify the parties to it in interposing even so far as to arrest the progress of evil and thereby preserve the Constitution itself as well as to provide for the safety of the parties to it, there would be an end to all relief from usurped power. Apply here, close quote with the from usurped power. Apply here the interposing power to a single state, and it would not be true that there would be no relief from usurped power. A sure and adequate relief would exist in the interposition of the states as the co-parties to the Constitution with a power of the utmost importance or paramount to the Constitution itself. Now, if you're not getting this, it is very clear that the doctrine that is the babblings that is coming, that they call doctrine of nullification, from those who are espousing nullification have no idea what they're doing. Because clearly, Madison is saying that single state nullifying is absolutely perverse, leads to anarchy, and is destructive because it is a part of the problem. When you've got a government that's not abiding by the Constitution, and then all of a sudden states are going to start cherry picking what parts of the Constitution they want to follow, we literally have anarchy. This is why when I talk about organizations that cherry pick the part of the Constitution that they think is important, and I'll just name a few of them, those who support the health freedom, those who support, you know, stopping abortion, those who support Second Amendment rights. That's just three. There are many, many, many organizations and flavors to each of these organizations and issues. And I'm here to tell you that that is a part of the anarchy, that the people that have created these organizations have either done so because they want to contribute to anarchy, or they are completely lost, illiterate, and not understanding the Constitution, that the Constitution provides powers to the general government through the sovereign bodies, not the sovereign body. So we have to work together. We have to unify these states. That's it. It's that simple. I could just stop right here and say I'm done. But I'm on page 4. Currently, I'm in page 4 of 13. So in other words, Madison took, and for the most part, we just kind of went through, I'm going to say, the first of four times Madison walks around the woodshed, giving you a view from the roof level or the gutter level. Next view maybe from the eave level. Next view maybe from the waist level. And the next view maybe from the foundation level. But he goes through this in such detail that what's so hard to get? Why is it that there's so many people out of the 10th Amendment Center, out of the John Birch Society, that cling to this concept that Madison actually expels as a bad concept? Anyway, let me just move forward. Here is paragraph 32. And if you're kind of curious, there are 94 paragraphs. So here's 32. But, continues the report, It starts off with a quote. So he's quoting, but, continues the report, and that's his injection here, it is objected that the judicial authority is to be regarded as the sole expositor of the Constitution in the last resort, close quote. In answering this objection, the report observes that, quote, however true it may be, the judicial department is, in all questions submitted to it by the forms of the Constitution, to decide in the last resort, this resort must necessarily not be the last. In relation to the rights of the parties of the constitutional compact, from which the judicial as well as other departments hold their delegated trust, in other words, that's where they get their power from, is the states. On any other hypothesis, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority delegating it, and the concurrence of this department with the others in usurped power might subvert forever and beyond the possible reach of any rightful remedy the very Constitution which are all instituted to preserve. This is why we take this oath. So, my friends, I don't think Madison understood some things, but I don't think Madison also grasped the importance of the need for holding public servants accountable to their oath of office. And this is where Section 3 of the 14th Amendment becomes so critical for us and what we need today. This is why, in my conversation with Douglas Gibbs, you're going to hear him actually say there's no doubt that Section 3 of the 14th Amendment is what we have to grab, cling, and use, unsheathe this sword and use this sword against every politician who chooses to violate their oath, who wants to commit moral perjury and abandon their honor, their integrity, and as far as I'm concerned, their citizenship, because that's what should happen. When these folks actually violate their oath of office, they should actually not only just be removed, I honestly think they should never be able to vote again. They should be just removed from the political process altogether. Because I believe if you don't put a value on something, you will instantly lose its value and you will begin marginalizing it. It's almost like devaluing one's spirit, the spirituality of the individual and its relationship to the Creator. Well, if you devalue that, you don't focus on it, then over time you lose the importance of that spirit to you. And all of a sudden, it means less and less. And all of a sudden, you don't even focus on it. And in so doing, you don't focus on that relationship with the Creator. It's the same thing with the Constitution. And it's the same thing with morality and everything else. We have debased ourselves in talking with Keith Broders, because he asked me where I got the quote from. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. Stan Hopper. It's in my book. When I first used that, I gave credit to Stan Hopper. He didn't tell me. He said that he had heard it from a professor, and that he said a professor just threw it out, and it was never cited. And I've tried to find, did anybody ever say that? Well, I can't find it. Other than, you know, I've been saying it a lot ever since, because I think it resonates. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So I was talking to Keith Broders. He wanted to cite me on that. And I said, technically, the first part, I don't ever heard it out of anybody's mouth, was Stan Hopper. But he didn't have a hard citation to it. So as far as I'm concerned, you know, we can just move forward, because I couldn't find one. Now, if somebody wants to come forward and say, I have the evidence that I said that, or this person created that, then that's great. We'll start giving the credit where credit is due. However, that being said, you know, what's more important is that we start using that so people can start placing context to the importance of being equally informed. Well, okay, so I'm on this aside or this tangent, so kind of let me quickly go through this so we can get back into the content here. Fact of the matter is as we were talking, and the whole point of how this relates to this evil, this debasement that has happened, is that if you understand what we have been doing as a society to create this nation, our forefathers, what they did in enlightenment, that all came from elevating morality in society and controlling behavior and becoming better instead of, you know, following the lusts and the carnal desires. They became educated and disciplined and all those things that are now evil today. We have literally turned our good, enlightened society upside down and have now made evil good and good is evil. And we have debased ourselves to where we've become desensitized to what our rights are, what our Constitution is, even who our Creator is. We have moved in that direction, and it just goes to show how easy we have been subverted by the old plan of the old deceiver himself, Satan. Because as I was telling Keith, Satan's been doing this for years and years and years. This is nothing new. So we either start recognizing and start putting proper context and perspective to moving forward, or we're never going to get there. Anyway, back to this. On the other hypothesis, the delegation of, that's what I just finished. Paragraph 33. Here is a direct proof that the authority of the Supreme Court of the United States was understood by the legislature of Virginia to have been to an interposition of the states against the Alien and Sedition Acts, because they're using acronyms, so it threw me off. We will be right back. I'll repeat this when we come back after these two promos. Hang in there, folks. We'll be right back.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me, AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just reread this short paragraph, 33. And this is really broken up, so it's not very clear what he's saying here because I think there's some things missing. Here is a direct proof that the authority of the Supreme Court of the U.S. was understood by the legislature of Virginia to have been to an interposition of the states against of the alien and sedition laws. So those two little pauses, I think there's something missing there, but this is the text that we have. The next following paragraph, I think, really clarifies what he was trying to say here. Who can avoid seeing the necessity, understanding the parties, quote-unquote, parties to the constitutional compact, the authority which made the compact and from which all the departments held their delegated trust? That means the judiciary, the executive, and the legislative. That's the delegated departments, or which the departments, right? So he calls the branches departments, okay? These trusts were certainly not delegated by a single party. By regarding the term parties, it is not plural and individual meaning. The answer to the objection is clear and satisfactory. To take the term as meaning a party and not the parties, and there is neither truth nor argument in the answer, but further on the hypothesis that the rights of the parties meant the rights of a party, it would not be true as affirmed by the report that, quote, the delegation of judicial power would annul the authority delegating it, and that the concurrence of this department with others in usurped power, it would subvert it forever and beyond the reach of any rightful remedy. The very Constitution, which all were instituted to preserve, however deficient, however deficient a remedial right in a single state might be to preserve the Constitution against usurped powers, and an ultimate and adequate remedy would always exist in the rights of the parties to the Constitution, in whose hands the Constitution is at all times but clay in the hands of the potter, and who could apply a remedy by explaining, amending, or remaking it. So in other words, there are, because he kind of points out here that the parties have this power over this Constitution and over the government that the Constitution creates, the federal government, like the clay in the hands of a potter who could apply a remedy by explaining, amending, or remaking or rewriting the Constitution altogether. So he's throwing out three different things that the power that the potter has. Now, explaining is the process of the interposition. You don't need to amend the Constitution to force the federal government into complying to the Constitution as written. That's the explaining. And if you look at Republic Review, when we go through the process of Republic Review, that is the remedy that comes from the explaining that he points to here. The amending would be, okay, so they created all these things. We want to give them these powers. No. Anybody will tell you that allowing the federal government into these types of things, they've only proven that they're willing to kill people, manipulate. I mean, look at the history of the government and the powers that they've assumed. I mean, come on, look at, just do yourself a favor and look at how the government has created experiments on the blacks with, you know, syphilis and gonorrhea in communities, or I should say the government, people under the title and operating by the tax dollars is the CIA or what have you, even though the Constitution has never granted these powers. They have gone down and assumed these types of powers. The war on drugs and things that have been exposed, all of these things, the spying and the... I could go on and on. I could just try to make a show on the heavy-handed tactics, the killing of those people in Waco, the Branch Davidians, or Ruby Ridge. We could go on and on and on. There have been bad players in government, but the Constitution and the government that is in compliance to that Constitution is not bad. It has only been proven to be good. And the problem hasn't been the government, or I should say the Constitution itself. It has been the states have failed or have allowed the federal government to pay them and do one thing while the Constitution requires them to do something else. And so as we kind of move forward, let me end this last paragraph with this, because again, as the one or the other mode might be the most proper remedy. So that, again, explaining, amending, or remaking it as the one or the other. Okay, so what we want to do is we want to kind of help you kind of understand that there is this concept well beyond the Article 5 process, because the three remedies, the first one is not an Article 5 process. If we want the federal government to be able to do something, or we want to take it away from them, or we want to remake it altogether, those last two remedies, amending or remaking the Constitution, falls in the power of, again, the parties of the states. But just because you have the states together, 27, 28, does not make a convention for making or amending the Constitution, because they all agreed that it would require two-thirds of the states to petition to do so. This is why when we go into Republic Review, you're going to recognize that all states that have active petitions for an Article 5 convention must rescind that petition. They must tell the federal government, we no longer want to amend or remake this Constitution. What we want to do is enforce it. And that right there creates the clarity of the first from the other two, three, or the other two of the three. Such being the comment of the report on the third resolution, it will fully demonstrate the meaning attached to it by Virginia when passing it and rescues it from the nullifying misconstruction in which the resolution has been distorted. This is this is really, really good because I want to highlight this for you because this again pokes those nullifiers in the eye. It fully demonstrates the meaning attached to it by Virginia when passing it and rescues it from the nullifying misconstruction into which the resolution has been distorted. It's not about nullifying. It is about obtaining full compliance. It is about interposition. It is about taking action and getting the federal government into full compliance. Nullifying, again, at a single state level is more destructive, creating anarchy. 36, let it next be seen how far the comment of the report on the seventh resolution above inserted accords with that of the third, and that this may be more conveniently be scanned by every eye. The comment is subjoined at the full length. Here is not a shadow of countenance to the doctrine of nullification. Under every aspect, it enforces the arguments and authority against such an acrophile version of the text. Paragraph 38. From this view of the subject, those who will duly attend to tenor, to the tone of the proceedings of Virgia and Virginia, again, he uses these acronyms, it's actually a word, and to the circumstances of the period when they took place, will concur in the fairness of disclaiming the inference from the undeniableness of truth that it could not be the truth meant to be asserted in the resolution. The employment of the truth asserted and the reasons for it are striking to be denied or striking are too striking to be denied or misunderstood. More than this, the remark is obvious that those who resolve the nullifying claim into the natural right to resist intolerable oppression are precluded from interfering to that right meant by the resolution, since that is as little denied as the paramountship of the authority creating a constitution over the authority derived from it. The true question, therefore, is whether there be a constitutional right in a state to nullify a law of the United States. We have seen the absurdity of such a claim in its simple, naked, and suicidal form. Let us turn to it as modified by South Carolina into a right in every state to resist within itself the execution of federal law deemed by it to be unconstitutional and to demand a convention of the states to decide the question of constitutionality, the annulment of the law, to continue in the meantime and to permanent unless three-fourths of the states concur in overruling the annulment. And that was the perversion of South Carolina, that they basically said, we can annul this until we have three-fourths of the states that actually, you know, want to take away the annulment ability or overruling the annulment. And so, as you can see, he actually does reference the convention here, but he also points to the potter's hand in the clay and how actually explaining or republic review is a separate process from the other two forms. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the republic and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.